This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The wind blows hard against this mountainside, across the sea into my soul.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to PTPN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined on this very nice evening by Adam Murray. How are you doing?
I am doing not too bad. How about you?
I am doing well. Yeah, it's a little different because we usually do this in the morning time, but we're doing this kind of in the moonlight.
Well, you know, it's NCAA tournament time. All the conference tournaments are in now, so we gotta fit this in where we can, because now is a nice little lull. The NBA teams haven't started their playoff push just yet. There's a little too many games left, a little more jockeying. So now it's just college time.
Yeah, it's also that. Yeah, you say college time, and it's pretty apropos, because what happens is that Turner is part of the television deal now with the NCAA tournament, so that they can play all the games in full on their blanket of networks, TNT, TBS, True TV, along with CBS. But the thing is that because of the fact that TNT airs the primetime NBA games in the weekdays on Thursdays, that gets bumped by the tournament for 2 weeks. So basically, in a weird way, the NBA kind of goes dark. Do you kind of feel the same way, or do you feel like people just watch the NBA ad nauseum anyway?
Well, those who are going to watch the NBA are going to watch it. It's just, you know, this is the time for the first 2 weeks of the tournament. The only 2 weeks that the average person cares is for the upsets and which 12 seed will win. And you know, NBA is like, you know what? It's cool. This is a good time for us to scout. We'll just quietly do our thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a nice working relationship where they just continue to poach all the talent.
Yeah, and it feels like people are sort of taking their break, too. Not necessarily to watch college basketball, just to kind of just get a lazy day. The Memphis Grizzlies sat all their guys for a Thursday night TNT game while the Grizzlies got blown out by the Wizards. The Golden State Warriors followed suit against the Denver Nuggets. It just feels a little bit like the Atlanta Hawks did it, I believe, also in a game where they lost to the Philadelphia 76ers. It feels like people are kind of taking, like, they take one game and they're like, you know what? We'll just take the day off. I mean, does that offend you?
It kind of really does, because let's say I paid to go see that game. Those aren't cheap tickets. And to see like the entire team just rest because they don't feel like playing, San Antonio got a lot of flack for that when they did it, but now everybody's doing it, and it's not good for the game.
San Antonio got big flack for it because that was a TNT night game, and David Stern fined him for it.
That was a big Miami game. Now it's just like, The entire team takes the you know, four starters are out. It's like, come on.
My one cop out, as you know, being on the optimistic side of it, is that, well, it gives an opportunity to the guys that don't play often, and these guys are really good at basketball too.
Well, yeah, it's good for the eighth and ninth.
The Justin Holidays of the world, yeah.
So, you know, okay, you're gonna take your daughter to the game, you know, you spend a couple $100 for tickets, and you're going to watch Norris Cole because Anthony Davis and Tyreek and Eric Gordon feel like taking the night off?
If Anthony Davis and Tyreek Evans take the night off, I think the Pelicans might lose 3 games in a row.
You're going to see Alex and Zinka and Jimmer Fredette because everybody feels like taking a break? No, it's not fair to those who paid to see it.
That's true. One thing that I think a lot of people would actually pay to watch on pay-per-view was Kyrie Irving's performance in a phenomenal game between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the San Antonio Spurs in AT&T Center. A lot of hype surrounding the fact that, you know, LeBron had already played the Spurs returning as a Cavalier earlier in the season, and they lost in a tight one. But this is the game where, you know, he had gotten eliminated as a member of the Miami Heat in San Antonio in the finals. It was his last game with Miami, so it was kind of a reunion of sorts, a rekindling of a rivalry, I guess you could say. And great game by LeBron, fast pace. I mean, just up and down, great stuff. Kawhi Leonard was great. He was shadowing LeBron almost the entire game, but Irving was unbelievable. He was just breaking down people off of dribbles, hitting three-pointers left and right. He had 46 points at the end of regulation, including a game-tying three-pointer at the buzzer, and then he scored 11 more points to finish off with 57. First, did you even watch the game?
I saw the highlights of it. I watch all of Kyrie's shots. And should I be impressed by this? Did we not know he was good to begin with?
Yeah, but we were worried about his selfishness as a guard. So there was a little bit of animosity there, I think, when LeBron first got there, and they weren't winning all that much to begin with. And Irving was taking a lot of shots. People saying Irving's trying to sabotage LeBron's return.
No, it was, you know, we had mentioned this ad nauseum, but it was a new system. The whole entire team was new. It didn't know how to play with each other. So should we give credit to him for becoming more mature? Should we always knew LeBron was the quintessential teammate and would actually defer to other people. Nobody's doubting his talent. It's not like Russell Westbrook, who averages triple doubles with, you know, points, assists, and turnovers. Mm-hmm. You know, Kyrie knows how to be a point guard. He's not just going in shooting and trying to take over the whole team.
Yeah, he doesn't dish out that many assists. In the game where he scored 57 points, 20 of 32 shooting from the field, including 7 for 7 from the three-point line, a few of which were just absolute daggers, perfect from the free throw line, 10 for 10. Only two turnovers, but only 5 assists, which is a little bit weird.
The offense doesn't run through him. He's already, you know, center court, he's already passed the ball away. That's already moving. It's in motion. Mm-hmm. It's not waiting for him with, you know, 5 seconds to go to start making a play.
Yeah, LeBron's a facilitator.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't go through him, so there's no really need for him to have many assists.
Yeah, but LeBron played facilitator, only scoring 31 points with 5 rebounds and 7 assists. Obviously, because of the points total, Kyrie was the star, judging by the song that you heard to start off this wonderful podcast. Do you have a favorite 80s song? That's one of my favorite 80s songs. What's yours?
Falco, Rock Me Amadeus.
Oh, man, I don't like that one. It was like the original DJ song.
It was, I was 6 years old. I had one of those Dr. Seuss All About Me book, and I wrote my favorite song was Amadeus. So I'm going to have to defer to my 6-year-old self because he was there.
Well, maybe you were thinking about the movie Amadeus.
Again, I'm not going to argue with my 6-year-old self and whatever logic he may have had back then.
Kawhi Leonard did take a little bit of heat for missing those free throws that would have sealed it. Then Kyrie forced it into the overtime. LeBron started drilling threes. Kyrie started drilling threes. Let me actually look at these totals. 52 combined 3-point attempts in that game. That is unbelievably that's high. Really entertaining game. I still prefer the one that the Warriors and the Hawks had in Atlanta about a month ago. That was my favorite game. But a lot of people are calling this the game of the year in the regular season. Let me ask this with Kyrie Irving. Do you feel like in this regular season he is truly like a rot? He had great moments like All-Star Game MVP, the great performance in the FIBA World Cup where he drilled all those three-pointers in the gold medal game. But do you feel like Kyrie Irving in the past couple of months with all the success Cleveland's had has arrived as a star player, or do you think that that is yet to come in the playoffs?
Well, as I've said many times before, an all-star MVP is the most useless award you could possibly get because nobody's playing that game. Yeah.
Glenn Rice won all-star game MVP.
Yeah, they just have to give it to somebody. Really, I would say the underestimation would be the FIBAs because everyone who seemed to play that really developed and really became more mature. You know, you could say, you know, Kenneth mm-hmm. Faried, you know, destroyed it. And yeah. Obviously he's being misused now.
He's playing better since Melvin Hunt took over.
Yeah, that's strange. The whole team's playing better.
Tune into our previous episode for more talk about that.
Yeah, but it's just Kyrie became a point guard. He became like the leader, and it comes down to maturity.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about the FIBA World Cup thing, come to think of it. You know how they used to have the Dream Team curse – where everybody would get hurt at the same time that played for the U.S. Olympic team, and people were like, man, you shouldn't even play for the Olympic team because it wears you down. If you look at the roster, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Anthony Davis, Korver didn't make the team. He got cut at the last second, but I'm thinking of some of the other guys that was on that team. Boogie Cousins, we talked about Irving, James Harden, all have had really good years. I mean, career best years. So you might have a point there. It's strange how they all kind of came together and through their success as, you know, coming together as a team, they become even better as individuals.
Exactly. Because, you know, they had to buy in to a team concept. The dream teams were just, okay, we're all superstars. We're all playing together. All right, we're used to sitting and chilling for 3 months. Oh, we got to get into shape. Of course, you know, your body will break down because most of them were, I don't want to say past their prime by the time the dream teams were announced.
In 92, yeah, they were some of them were kind of knocking on the door, and some of them were just coming in. Like Stockton wasn't that. Well, I say that he was like 8 years into the league, so that's a bad example. David Robinson was pretty young when he was on that team.
Oh, he was only 47 then. you know, but they were already, of course their bodies are going to break down if they're practicing when they're not supposed to. These guys, they already knew it.
And they're all young. I mean, Kyrie Irving is going to be 23 years old at the end of this month.
Exactly. And there's a difference between, you know, him and what he's doing. And then who was the number two pick that year?
Which year is that?
The Kyrie draft.
Oh my God, that was Derek Williams.
Yeah, there's a reason he's where he is, and Derek Williams is getting garbage time as a future Chinese League All-Star.
You know, let's go backwards for a second with that talk, and I'll just kind of give you a choice. The FIBA World Cup team, I'm going to list you, including Paul George, who got hurt in the scrimmage. So I'm going to go ahead and include him onto that team. But let me try to look up who was on the team itself, because it's not going to be – it shouldn't be that hard to find. Let me see here. If you had to pick a starting five from there, who would you take from that FIBA World Cup team?
Because
I already listed about six or seven of them that would make pretty good candidates.
Let's see. I would take, obviously, Harden.
Okay.
Harden, Curry would be my backcourt. Cousins and Davis would be my, you know, big centers, and then
as your small forward, you would need somebody. You could take George. You could take.
I'm like, gonna go DeRozan.
DeRozan was on that team. You're right. Derrick Rose was on the team, but
no. I would say Kenneth Faried would be sort of the sixth man, and I would kind of go with DeRozan over Gay.
Yeah, Rudy Gay. Well, Rudy Gay's solid. I mean,
he saw no fault against him, but I'm just saying with the team I sort of have, I've sort of picked there. I kind of want DeRozan to be a little more stretched than.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I don't know. Are we playing international rules or NBA rules?
NBA rules.
Okay, then I'm gonna go with Davis and Cousins because if it was international, you can't go with two centers.
Yeah. Yeah. If there was any other world guys, would you pick them over the other?
Any other world guys?
Like any of the world guys, like Rudy Gobert for France, or I'm just stretching it. Boris Diaw with France, and Mark and Pau Gasol with Spain.
Oh, I would definitely. You'd have to mention Dragic.
Oh, true.
Dragic for.
But I would. It'd be hard to pick Curry or Harden. Or take one of those guys out and put in Dragic.
Oh, I got to take one of those two out?
Yes, you have to. Because of the backcourt, you know, it'd be too low. You can only pick five guys.
Only because I'm not – I would say maybe for a stretch I'd go for Jonas Valanciunas. Valanciunas for Cousins.
Yeah, you would think you would think with DeRozan and Valanciunas that with that experience that the Raptors would kind of take that leap, and they did, but then they just leaped right backwards.
Well, they did, but he's still kind of soft and he's still developing. I mean, He's only 21 or 22, I believe.
Yeah, very, very young, Jonas Valanciunas is. He was 18 when he was drafted.
Yeah, and then he came in a year later. Yeah. He's only 22.
Yeah, and DeRozan was a one-and-doner back in 2009, so it's not like he's been in the league for about 4 years or 5 years, but it's not like he's 30. You know, well, still got a ways to go.
The problem with them is Amir Johnson took a major tumble, James Johnson hasn't done anything, and Terrence Ross really regressed under them as your most irrelevant guy to score 50.
He's got a great windmill dunk, though.
But what is he providing to the team? He hasn't been that really spark off the bench.
He's not a great defender. He's a very streaky long range shooter. He's not tall enough to be a small forward, and he's not a good enough shooter to only play shooting guard alongside DeRozan.
Well, that's the thing, is you can't play those two together, and you already have a undersized shooting guard in Lou Williams.
Yeah, and then if you play Lowry and Williams, then you're really in trouble because you're getting really murdered size wise in the backcourt.
Exactly. So they need and Patrick Patterson, as much as he's a glue guy, he's not. They need a solid four.
Yeah, they've got Amir, but he's more of a five. I always felt like he was.
Who?
Amir Johnson.
Oh, he has done nothing this year. Like, Raptors fans are very upset with him because he's just sort of crapped the bed a bit.
The word I use for him is utility center.
Yeah, utility center. Who's he's 6'8 or 6'9 though. He's the small ball center. And if you have that finesse guy, you need somebody. You know, you need a bruiser to protect the rim, and Patterson or Amir is not it.
Well, the thing is, it's weird, but center has become the new role player in the NBA. Would you agree? Because it seems like the people like the Boogie Cousinses and Anthony Davises and I'm trying to think of another really good, the Marcus Sulls, those guys are extra, extra rare. Like, Shaquille O'Neal was rare. He was the postmodern Wilt Chamberlain. But in the years of Shaquille O'Neal walking the NBA earth, there were a lot of other great big men around him that he was competing against. Now it feels like there's just not very many. Dwight Howard's another, but there's less and less and less of them. And now it's to a point where centers are only asked to do very specific things. Like, can you defend? Can you be a leader? Can you make a jump shot? Can you make a three like Channing Frye does with the Orlando Magic? It just seems like the centers are now basically asked to not try to be so well, not be as all around of a player, be more of a strict role player for this specific role. Would you agree with that?
I would say yes and no. I would agree with that now, but it's changing. Because everything changed. You needed the stretch four, stretch five, because it came a point guard league. And as we mentioned in our point guard ranking
episode,
spreads
the floor, gives them more penetration.
That was the thing. And, more point guards are coming in. You don't – the 7'2" slow-footed Eastern European center was no longer needed anymore. Mm-hmm. You needed that really athletic 6'11", up and down the court, Anthony Davis, Nerlens Noel, just that skinny dude who can run. Mm-hmm. But it's changing now. Look at this year's upcoming draft. Okafor, Towns.
Willie Cauley-Stein.
Cauley-Stein. Kaminsky.
Bobby Portis.
Lottery.
Bobby Portis at Arkansas. I watched him play about a week ago. He is a beast.
Okay, so we have those. 2015, just the ESPN rankings, there are five centers in the top 10, eight with Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. Eight of the top 10 class for next year are big men. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a resurgence.
Yeah, but the thing is, this focus, the paradigm has to shift. You have to have enough. It's like the point guards, like we were talking about in that discussion about how there was the fact that one of the reasons why the point guard era began, the golden age began, was because there were so many good ones that you could focus the attention on them, and you could shift your focus on offense to having the point guard run the show as the scorer and the facilitator. with the bigs, like I was saying, there's just not many of them. You know, for every Dwight Howard, there's like three Adonis Thomases. You know, there's just not that many really good big guys. Even a guy like Timofey Mozgov, he's not asked to do a lot. He's only asked to do one or two things. But for Cleveland, you know, where Kyrie Irving plays, it's worked for them. Those two or three little things that Mozgov does, it worked.
Well, yeah, he was the complementary piece to the system. And, you know, you're saying for big men, look at Anthony Davis. Because you have that big ground in Omar Asik, mm-hmm. Anthony Davis is now tearing everybody up.
Yes.
And you're going to see more of those players starting to come in now.
So you see centers more as, like, complementary to the stars, not necessarily as, like,
You're not going to find the next Shaq. Mm-hmm. Like, the closest thing to Shaq... I might be a little far-fetched, but I would say Cousins is the closest thing to Shaq right now in the NBA.
Yeah, in terms of physicality and strength, yes.
Yes.
I agree with you there.
And then, you know, I like what I see on Nurkic. He has the attitude, he has the strength, he just needs to put it together.
Yeah, but Nurkic is like Eduardo. You remember Eduardo Nájera?
Yeah.
He reminds me of Nájera, only a lot bigger and stronger, you know? That really annoying guy, only he's so big that you can't really say anything to him because he could dunk on you.
Yeah, but he's, you know, I think he could develop in, you know, if he had gone to, you know, Kentucky, because where else would he have gone, really?
Well, Enes went to Kentucky.
Yeah, but I'm just saying everybody seems to go to Kentucky with the one-and-done system. You know, yeah. He would be, a light years ahead than being in that mismatched system he's in now. But I'm saying, you know, now you're the dominant center you're not going to find anymore because the lean, athletic, you know, KG as a power forward, not as, you know, the small forward when in his younger years. They're going to be the complementary to the pick and roll guy.
Well, you know, it all comes full circle because I was reading an article, a really good article on Grantland written by Andrew Sharp, and it sort of focused on the two Kentucky big men, two of whom you mentioned in the draft class, one being Karl-Anthony Towns and the other one being Willie Cauley-Stein. And they mentioned how Willie Cauley-Stein's potential, not necessarily on the offensive end, but on the defensive end, is so high because of the fact that if you watch guys like Mozgov, if you watch a guy like Rudy Gobert with the Utah Jazz, who's really been turning heads since the Enes Kanter trade when he was inserted into the starting lineup and got more major minutes, it seems like these guys are almost like a defensive trigger for the offense, where they can get block shots, they can protect the rim, and they can help those guards get runouts by blocking shots and misdirecting offenses and misdirecting shots. And that those guys, while not offensive, you know, juggernauts, are great enablers for the offense. So, I mean, do you see something like that where, I mean, Rudy Gobert is a very small sample size right now, and we'll talk about the Jazz in a second. But do you feel like guys like that, the defensively minded centers, the rim protectors, do you think that there are guys that can be great cogs for NBA offenses? It's weird that guys that are whose jobs are basically to block shots can be good offensive facilitators. Am I making sense here?
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And it just needs, you know, the player to not be the I'm the hero, I'm gonna take the last shot. It's just, yo, I'm gonna come in, I'm going to block shots, I'm going to make it miserable for your team.
Yeah, I'm thinking of other examples. Thiago Splitter's a good example, I would say. You know, just a good rebounder, good shot blocker, takes dump offs, you know, and he doesn't get in the way of the offense. He moves, you know. Moving without the ball is big about this too. The thing about centers is they're used to moving without the ball all the time.
Well, the thing is they're used to just not moving and just sitting there and just waiting on the block.
Yeah, well, you know why? We all know that referees only call that 3-second violation once every game just to remind them, but they're not going to actually call it. People sit in the lane all the time. Look at Tim Duncan, for Christ's sakes. You know,
they just want you to make an attempt. Don't just blatantly park there. Just
exactly.
Like, lift a leg up, be like, oh, I'm out.
Okay, Rudy Gobert. He was picked in the lottery, I believe, in the 2013 NBA draft. I'm going to have to look that up just to make sure. But he was drafted by the Utah Jazz. No one really knew much about him except that he was from France, but he was 7'2", and he had the longest wing, one of the longest wingspans that they ever measured at the draft combine. He comes in, and his rookie year didn't do anything. Well, the FIBA World Cup that we had just mentioned, that where Kyrie Irving lit up Serbia in the gold medal game, well, Spain got upset by France, and one of the main reasons that happened is because Gobert was an absolute animal defensively against the Gasol brothers by himself for France in the front court. This season, I don't want to turn Enes Kanter into a goat, but doesn't it seem like Gobert has almost ascended since the Kanter trade?
First, I need to correct you. He was not drafted in the lottery. He was drafted late 20s, because I remember my, you know, coworker was a Spurs fan, so mm-hmm. I just found the first, you know, international guy who might be there, and I actually researched him because I thought, like, oh, the Spurs are going to take him. So he was not anywhere near the lottery. He was 26th, 27th, around that area.
Okay. I'm actually going to look it up while you talk.
All right, I accept your apology already. and second of all, there's nothing wrong with Kanter. He's a great player. It's just, if you ever watch the Jazz game, him and Derek Favors just can't coexist. They just, you know, neither would play defense, neither would, you know, it just wasn't a good fit. And there's nothing wrong saying, oh, he's, you know, the scapegoat for it. It's just, you have situations where you just put two guys together and it's not working. You get, you know, Gobert, who's just this defensive guy, and you get Favors, who's gonna be a shooter, and just, you know, he's becoming more and more stretch as we speak right now, but you have a more complimentary player.
The Utah Jazz have been 9-2 since the All-Star break. They have one of the best records of the Western Conference since then. They still have a losing record, but if they were in the Eastern Conference, they would be right in the thick of the playoff race. Gobert has just been a dominant force. He had 20 rebounds in a game just recently. He had another 20 rebound game earlier this month. But I think there's more to it with Utah. Where would you point at it with Utah, and their success?
Utah had always been that great question mark. They just seemed like a mismatched team. Dante Exum hasn't done anything for, he just looks lost.
No, but he starts while Burke, who's the more experienced player, comes off the bench as a lightning rod.
The funny thing is, has there been a trade where everyone has unanimously turned and said, we got that trade wrong? You know, Burke for Dang and Shabazz Muhammad, everyone's like, oh, Utah got the better deal. Now everyone's like, wait a minute, Minnesota actually stole these two guys from him.
Yeah, well, Burke's played well. You know,
he's been inconsistent.
He has. Muhammad got hurt. Dang is another guy that was picked in the same time as Rudy Gobert, who, you are correct, he was picked number 27th. One of his a fellow Frenchman, Livio Jean-Charles, was picked right after him by San Antonio, has yet to play. He's in that covert operation out in the internationals that the Spurs always hides their players in, so that in 4 years they all come out and nobody knows who the hell they are, and then they win the NBA championship. But yeah, it's the other one that is Bebe, you know, the guy in with the Toronto Raptors now, with the afro, Lucas Nogueira. I don't think he plays at all. Kelly Olynyk, your best friend in Boston. Steven Adams in Oklahoma City. Alex Len with the Phoenix Suns. And Nerlens Noel, who actually is another really good example of those kind of like defensive utility big men that we're talking about. But going back to the Burke point, I don't see it that way. I still think that was pretty – I think that was a win-win. I think Utah sort of got something good out of it. I think Rodney Hood has been a surprise for them as a rookie. The other rookie that they had, you talked about Exum. He's still learning on the job. Gordon Hayward has played really well.
Oh, Gordon Hayward is he is the most underrated player I think there is, because nobody talks about him, and he's putting up great numbers.
And underrated hair.
Oh, that hair is horrible.
It looks like something from a Clockwork Orange.
That European look, oh, it's just, I'm not a fan.
Trevor Booker, who was a signee in the free agency, he's done pretty well. Are you pouring some vodka there?
Sorry about that.
I told you we're taping this at night. It's getting rough over here. But the Jazz is one example. Quinn Snyder coaches that team. It's hard to really figure out what they do. Some people were guessing that it was going to be a very San Antonio Spurs inspired type of coaching job, where they do a lot of motion offense, a lot of multiple action. And I'm not smart enough to really know what type of action they run on offense, but whatever they're doing, it's working. I think their main cog is on the defensive end. That's why I focused on Gobert with their success, because I think Gobert being a stopper at the rim has vastly improved their defense over the last 2 or 3 months.
Well, the thing about them is just they seemed like a mismatched team, and just random player here, random player there. No real identity. And now they sort of have one with Gobert.
Okay, that's my team to pick as a team that obviously will not make the playoffs in the West. The West is just way, way too competitive, where we are still having drama with the Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans. Maybe the Phoenix Suns, but they're not going the right direction right now. A loss here, like, it's almost like one step forward, two steps back with Phoenix. Like, they're not dropping out, but they're not getting ahead. But anyways, do you see a team next year that they won't make the playoffs, won't go far if they made the playoffs, but might do damage and turn heads next season in 2015?
Well, next year's most dangerous team will be, if they miss the playoffs, would have to be Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
With Paul George coming back and a lottery pick.
Well, not only that, they could let Roy Hibbert walk, and they could have that cap money to sign somebody new.
They could, but you put a big hole at center, because they don't really have, because
Roy Hibbert is a big hole at center.
Yeah, but they have David West, who's old, Scola, who's even older.
It's unbelievable that Scola seems older, because he came in the league like a good 4 years after David West.
Yeah, but he was one of those Europeans who was already old when he came.
Like a Sabonis type. He comes in and he's got like smoker's cough, and he's got like 5 kids.
Or like, Atlanta with Pero Antic, who's a 31-year-old rookie.
Yeah. You know that Demontis Arvidas' son, he's playing for Gonzaga.
Yes.
And he's a grown-ass man. I think he could play in the NBA. I don't know if he'd be a starter, though, but, he's no Olenek. I'm sorry.
Oh, there's... Oh, nobody's an Olenek.
If he was a Canadian from the Sabonis family, I think he'd go a lot farther. But that's just me.
Sabonis, like, there's a niche for him in the NBA, but the question is, do you want to be an NBA bench warmer, or do you want to be a EuroLeague All-Star?
You want to be an NBA bench warmer, because at least you get the experience. At least you could say, I played in the NBA. Like, do you want to be... Let me put it this way. Do you want to be JC Navarro, or do you want to be Damian Rudiš for the Indiana Pacers?
It really just comes down to, do you want the lifestyle, or do you want the fame?
Yeah, but how much fame do you have in EuroLeague? I mean, obviously you're famous in your native country and you're famous for your club, but it's not the NBA. The NBA is global now.
The NBA is global, but it comes down to do you want to be a starter, or do you want to be a bench player?
Because if you can make that million plus, even on a small deal, and you have the chance of starting in case guys drop, then I think people would still – I think players would still take that chance. Like, do you think Josh Childress wanted to play for Olympiacos?
Yes, because they offered him the most money. Well, that, they gave him that, you know, three years.
Well, that owner
million.
Was an idiot, and that's why the Greek economy crashed 4 years later. Idiots like him.
Well, that was just, and that was, you know, oh, everybody's going to start leaving, and.
I'm just kidding. That was Bernie Madoff's fault.
This was the new, you know, the new way in the NBA is you're now competing with the EuroLeague because they have money, and it's just. Mm-hmm. His career, when he came back, he was just a shell of himself. I have no idea what happened to him.
So, do you see any teams in that horizon? Like, maybe the Detroit Pistons?
The Pistons, it depends. It depends what they do, who they re-sign. Mm-hmm. They got two big decisions now.
Yeah. But Indiana, Indiana's a good one. It feels like a redux, though. You know, whenever Paul George comes back, there's really still no confirmation of what he's going to do. If he wants to play, I'm for it. You know, if you want to come back and just kind of get your feet wet again before you get back into the offseason, that's fine, so that you don't have the jitters when you come back next year. But it's going to be a different Pacers team. One guy who's played really well over the last 2 weeks for Indiana has been Rodney Stuckey. That came out of nowhere.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, in Detroit, he was the same way, just completely inconsistent. And one day he'll score 20 points, the next day he'll shoot 20 shots and get 4 points.
Somebody mentioned to me that he looks a lot like 50 Cent.
Yeah, he has a resemblance to it.
I mean, but yeah, like, Curtis Jackson?
Yes.
Yes.
The thing is, I still am being the optimist. I want to say Denver should be the team because they have the pieces. They just don't know what they're doing.
Are they going to find a coach that they will listen to and will enable them? That's the problem. I mean, even George Karl had that problem in Denver with getting, you know, trying to balance out taking defense seriously, which is what you need to do in order to win playoff series, and running and gunning on offense, which
is
what
wins in the regular season. Well, he never took it seriously. That's the thing is he never did. So that's why they went as far as they did. But from just a talent standpoint of teams who should turn it around, I don't know what their draft picks are looking like, but you would think with what they have, and even though Gallinari is unfortunately never came back from his injuries, with just Ty Lawson being, you know, probably arguably, could we say he's the best player on?
That's fair. Either him or Reed. Fareed's the most highest paid player, but
no, I was gonna say the best guard in all these lottery teams.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, on these young teams on the up and coming, is there anyone better than Ty Lawson?
If you look at, I mean, you could say Rubio with the Minnesota Timberwolves. I know Elfrid Payton is very young. But he does have potential. I wasn't sure about him in the beginning, but I think he's been turning a decent corner. Could you call Victor Oladipo a point guard?
No.
Okay, so he doesn't count.
Unless you're Jock Vaughn.
Can we count Shane Larkin?
He'll be cut, but yes.
Eric Bledsoe is not – I mean, the Suns are not in the playoffs, so if you want to cheat, you could say that. I would probably still take Lawson over Bledsoe, though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I would take Lawson, I think, but that's,
you know,
just
where Lawson would be perfect if I was just looking at the standings? Sacramento. If you had a really good point guard whose job is really to get a score here and there and be an assist man, and you had DeMarcus Cousins, that would be a fright. That's why when we did the I don't know when it's going to come out here or there or anywhere, but when we did the Kentucky one, you picked Wall and Cousins on the same team. And that's a really frightening team because even though Wall's a good scorer, he's an assist guy first. And when you have a good assist guy like that with a big man, it's really, really hard to stop.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I would have to say Denver would be. Mm-hmm. And if you just want to go fast fallers, I'll say Portland.
We keep saying that, though. Like, we're waiting for them to fall apart.
And
Wesley Matthews, and also, I don't think we mentioned it, but Wesley Matthews tore his Achilles tendon. Such a shame. Really hard worker. Great three-point shooter. And he's done for the year. But they're still winning without him.
They're winning, but I don't. In the future, you have to pay Aldrich, you have to pay Lillard, you have to pay Matthews, Batum is up in a year or two.
Oh, yeah, at least one of those guys will be gone. You can't fit them all in the cap.
You could say, oh, well, you have this new cap, and which this is a good time to transition to the new cap.
Okay.
No, you're just going to let me keep going? Okay.
No, we can talk about that cap. What he's talking about is that we mentioned at the end of the previous episode about how the salary cap might spell doom for certain teams in the short term because of the fact that there hasn't been really a resolution yet on the revenue sharing from the revenue that's going to be coming in from the new television contract starting in 2016, because the revenue from the television contract directly affects how much money is thrown back into the pool for player salaries to reflect how, you know, the scale of how much star players get paid and the minimum for rookies and the minimum for veterans. And what it is that we have kind of been at a very slight increase for the last 5 or 6 years. I think we were in like the $63 million mark back in 2008. And I think over the years, it's climbed up I'm trying to remember where it's at. I think it's about like in the $75 million range, along with the luxury tax, maybe $76 million. And if you look at all those luxury tax, if you look at every team, their salary cap is like give or take about $2 million up to $2 million down, outside of a couple of very rare exceptions. Almost all of them are the same. They're all hovering right at that cut line of where the salary cap is, where the luxury tax is. Well, all the anticipations are saying that with the new television contract, in which revenue from the TV deal will triple by the time we get to the end of its deal in the 2020s, that the salary cap starting in 2016, barring any type of step-by-step increase, will go up to 88 or 92 million per team, which is unbelievable. It would be the largest salary cap increase in NBA history from year to year. The NBA was a little apprehensive about the idea of giving every organization in the NBA $20 more million to work with. Do you think that's a legit fear?
Yeah, as we mentioned last week, you could just have a team being like, I'm just going to, you know, what's going to stop me from signing two max guys or give a fringe player, you know, more? And, you know, now the max guy is going to make around, what, $30 million a year?
Yeah. Well, you know what? There also is a cap minimum. And for even the really bad teams, they're still going to have to spend money based on that new scale. So if you're at $92 million, let's say the cap million rises up to about $50 million. You know, you're going to have to spend money.
Yeah, and that's why Ben Gordon gets a two-year, $10 million deal from Orlando.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Jason Richardson still playing for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, he's still collecting a check from
McGee getting bought out and never playing a game. Or maybe playing one game, I don't know.
Yeah, just JaVale McGee just getting bought out, saying, you know, we're good, we'll just pay you, we don't care.
Yeah, just go home.
I've been going back and forth on it because I was like, okay, this will kill the NBA. Because how are you going to have, like, LeBron making $30 million and you're going to have these lower-paid guys with the old deals getting fraction of that? Where's the unity there?
So you're flip-flopping John Kerry?
I am just – well, I'm going back and forth, but look at Brooklyn. They are currently working under the new cap right now.
That's scary.
Their team any good with a $90 million payroll? No, and you'll see, like, once you sign on LeBron – and you have, let's just say, two max players, there's 60 of your 90 million done.
You know what's weird about it? One of the main fears behind LeBron leaving Miami was the fact that they wouldn't be able to afford another star along with Wade's contract, Bosch's contract, and LeBron's contract. if they had actually just waited it out another few years, they really would have been able to afford another star. Maybe they should have never broken up.
They would be past their prime by then. I don't even know. Do you even think Wade has two more good years left in him?
I think Wade has one more year after this, and then in terms of like all-star level production, I think he's done.
Yeah, so again, why they can't wait for that point, and that's why, you know, you get the Luol Deng coming in, and now that team is just assorted D-League all-stars, but that's a different story.
But you know, it's weird. It's almost like, let's say you have like a 100-yard dash. It's almost like telling these people, like 5 minutes before the race, okay, now it's a 120-yard dash. And, you know, you've been training all this time to gear towards, you know, doing all the right steps from, you know, 1 to 100 yards. Now you got to go another 20 if you can pull it off, if you can make the right moves. You know, the really smart GMs like R.C. Buford with the San Antonio Spurs, Masai Ujiri with the Toronto Raptors, who I think is a really, really smart guy. I think they could be cunning enough to pull off a good move, whether it's getting a max guy with that extra $20 million that you gain, or moving around the money and being able to get good players on decent deals, maybe $10 million here, $7 million there, and then adding your pieces that way. But it's going to be interesting to see what the game plan is for the GMs, because this is heaven for these general managers. For some of them, though, you're giving them enough rope to hang themselves with.
Well, that's the problem, is you can say you're not going to have any players sign a team-friendly deal now. Because why should I accept $10 million from Toronto when you have Phoenix who'll be like, we'll just give you $14 because we can.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And, you know, a lot of teams, from what I've read, are sort of worrying that after 2017 class will be completely screwed because all the money will be given away in 2016 and they're stuck with all these deals. So what's going to happen to those people?
I think the direct influence is this. Everybody, including free agents in 2015 this summer, a lot of them will convince themselves to either play out their options or sign one-year contracts so that they can see what the marketplace tells them in 2016. And also, all the restricted free agents coming off of their rookie deals, which is, I believe, going to be the 2012 class, which was a really good one that included like Anthony Davis, Bradley Beal, Damian Lillard. I believe that's going to be that class. A lot of them might sign their tenders and say, you know, I'm not going to take the extension yet. I'm going to see what money I can get later and play hardball. We already saw that with Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really hardball. Just San Antonio lowballed him now. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it with Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler, you know, and
yeah, but they're a victim of bad timing because their free agency comes up in 2015 underneath the new cap rules. The whole point of this is that the Players Association and Adam Silver were trying to work, who represents the owners, obviously, as the commissioner, we're trying to work out some type of compromise in what they would call, quote-unquote, a cap-smoothing process, in which they could increase from the $76 million to the $88 to $92 million range, give or take, in certain increments, whether it be like $5 million every year for like a four-year span or whatnot. They couldn't come to a deal, and so basically the entire thing got tabled. It probably won't be discussed until they get into the collective bargaining agreement. But the collective bargaining agreement will not be able open for discussion until 2017, which means that the 2016-17 season, the summer of 2016 in the offseason, will be an open season for this new money. You could spend this money whatever way you want.
Yeah, and it's just that's the teams are sort of just worrying about that, and agents are just salivating. They don't care.
They feel liberated. The GMs feel liberated. The agents are going to be swallowing this up.
That's why, because the agents don't care about the good of the game. They just want their paycheck, and they're willing to cannibalize the NBA for it. Mm-hmm. But just going back to what you said earlier, Anthony Davis, players like him, and let's say Bradley Beal, they're just going to sign their max deals for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, you know why? Because they got that Derrick Rose rule. Have you heard about this one where you get the 5-year extension, but if you hit certain incentives, like All-Star MVP, League MVP, you know, go to the NBA Finals, you can make up to 25% of your team's cap.
Yeah.
You know, so if you, you know, I think a lot of different guys are on this deal now. James Harden, Paul George, I believe John Wall is on a similar deal. And so that's the new thing, signing that 525. They call it 525, 5 years, 25% of the cap.
Yeah, so there's ways to make money, but it's just, you know, GMs also are going to be outsmarting each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to, somebody's going to talk themselves into giving, you know, just a really dumb deal to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be, I think it's going to start coming like the NFL where you're just really bidding against yourself almost.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point about that in the previous episode that, you know, we the Eddie Currys, the Jerome Jameses, the Mehmet Okors of the world, we might see that again where, you know, that really came to a halt starting around 2009 and 2011 after that lockout where people really started straddling the money for the cap line and people got lowballed on deals and were forced to take salaries that were lower than what they ever had been offered in their previous seasons. And I think we might see that again with the inflation of money where guys might be blowing up in terms of salary because of the fact that the veterans minimum, the mid-level exception, the, you know, the average for like a semi all-star type of player, those rates are going to go up. And if the max player is going from 22.5 million to 30 million, then a semi decent player is going to go from 7 million to probably about 11 or 12 million.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, the problem was nobody was saying, you know, LeBron shouldn't get $100 million. People were saying Brian Cardinal should not be getting $50 million. Donald Foyle should not be getting 31.
Eric Dampier.
Mark Blount. Eric Dampier. Rafe LaFrentz.
Yeah, how many other centers do we have to pick?
You know, that was the problem. And I got, you know, I could see it happening again. And I guess we should just enjoy what we got now.
Yeah. It's a brave new world with that salary cap. We're looking forward there to see. Now, you know, we're going to finish this one up and talk about, something that's near and dear to Adam and I, because we're both diehard New Orleans Saints fans. You would call yourself a diehard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lifelong.
Because he's there in Rhode Island, but he has Louisiana ties. And so the New Orleans Saints are in the NFL, where, as we discussed in the previous episode, the salary cap is pretty damn strict. I don't know the numbers exactly because I'm not an NFL economist. But basically, if you go over the NFL salary cap, you have to basically hire 5 lawyers so that you don't get sued. I don't know exactly how it works. Maybe Adam could shed some light on it.
It just makes no sense. Contracts are just the most random thing in the NFL. They just seem so arbitrary.
Okay, so the New Orleans Saints had got themselves in a situation where they were already over the cap with their current roster, especially after they signed Jimmy Graham to an extension where they actually kind of lowballed him as a tight end. They went through an arbitrary hearing so that they could restrict him as a tight end instead of a wide receiver so that he would not make as much money, got him on an $11 million contract with a signing bonus and blah, blah, blah. The Saints did not have a great year. You can blame a lot of things. You could blame Rob Ryan trying to do the same things on defense. You could blame the fact that Mark Ingram was not, to me, a feature back at all. Drew Brees regressing. Jimmy Graham having a shoulder injury. Maybe Sean Payton eating the cheese a little bit, you know, kind of reading his own press clippings. And I don't know. Do you think Sean Payton's lost touch a little bit?
The team just fell apart last year. The problem was there was no leadership. Mm-hmm. The team didn't do anything. The team didn't really play hard at all, and they just fell apart in every which way.
And they had already cut a lot of bait because of the salary cap already from the guys that had not only won in the Super Bowl, which was eons ago. You can't hang on to those guys forever, but guys that got them in the playoffs in 2013, and they had to let those guys go too. You know, and they just couldn't survive all those losses. Their defense regressed badly, and they went 7-9, I believe. So everybody was saying for the Saints, you know, they might have to do a tinkering here, a tinkering there. They didn't do a tinkering. They did a fucking rebuilding effort around Drew Brees.
I don't even know that. They just did just the most random things at all. You just trade Jimmy Graham away. You get a center. You sign another cornerback. You cut your starting linebacker. Mm-hmm. You sign C.J. Spiller. You cut your second best receiver.
You're rattling them off. But, you know, basically, there's a few of them. They cut Corey White. They let Pierre Thomas go, who was a beloved Saints player. He was always hurt as a running back, but we love Pierre Thomas. He was the master of the screen pass. So him getting let go broke a lot of Saints fans' hearts. Keenan Lewis, there were rumors out there that he might get let go, but they had to restructure Jarius Byrd's contract. Then the hammer dropped when this past week, they announced that Jimmy Graham was being traded to the Seattle Seahawks for Max Unger, a center, and a first-round draft pick. Absolutely floored me. And I'll tell you, most NFL deals do not shock me because I feel like they're all based on pretty solid logic on both sides. This one absolutely stunned me. What did it do to you?
I was the first thing I did was just text you going, what the hell's going on down there?
Absolutely. I don't know.
We'll put this in the context of the NBA. Mm-hmm. The only thing I could compare this to is when Chicago traded Elton Brand so they could draft Tyson Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you trade your best player, you're probably one of your best assets for, you know, just to get a draft pick.
Yeah, they got Eddie Curry too. But the swap was evenly basically Chandler for Brand.
Yeah.
So you traded Brand for Chandler and Curry.
That's basically what they're doing. They traded Jimmy Graham for a center and the 31st pick. Yeah. And it's just like, what? And then just all their moves and just, you know,
But I'll say this, because we saw this in Cincinnati when the Chad Ochocinco Carson Palmer era blew up and they had to start over. And everybody said, oh my God, the Cincinnati Bengals are going to be terrible. And it turned out not to be, because rebuilds in the NFL are pretty fast if your general manager is smart enough to figure out how to put all the pieces together. And there are some good GMs. There are some smart guys in the NFL. I think Mickey Loomis, the general manager of the Saints, is one of them. But this is a really Herculean effort, keeping Drew Brees in his mid-30s, not asking him to take a restructuring of his deal, which the Patriots told Tom Brady to do, and he did, and the Broncos told Peyton Manning to do, and he did. But it doesn't look like that's in the cards for Drew Brees. There's rumors circulating that he might get traded. I do not see that.
I wouldn't feel bad. At this point, I'd be like, you know what? He deserves a chance to win a championship.
If Drew Brees leaves the Saints, I'm telling you, Adam, half of this city is going to give up on the Saints.
Well,
to most people, Drew Brees is the Saints.
Yeah, I agree, but it's just sort of more out of pity now. Like, you know what? He deserves better.
I know, but do you think that there's the drop in production? Because I'm not talking about yardage, because everybody throws for 4,000 yards now in the NFL. Ryan Tannehill threw for fucking 4,000 yards. I think he did. But do you feel like the drop in production is just enough to give the Saints an excuse to blow up the team?
No, I think Brees has one or two years left. You're not losing. You still have the Saints have made it obscure receivers. Devery Henderson, seventh round pick Marcus Colston.
Lance Moore,
just nobody's become superstars.
So they think they can make the next Jimmy Graham.
They have, you know, Brandon Cook. You got C.J. Spiller to run screens now.
Mm-hmm. Well, they cut Kenny Stills.
Well, Brandon Cooks, I said.
Oh, okay. But they did cut Stills, which surprised me. They traded him
for a linebacker.
Mm-hmm. They cut Curtis Lofton. They're bringing in Brandon Browner, who played for the Patriots up there where you are. A really good player, obviously. Played for the Seahawks the year before that. Got busted for PEDs. But C.J. Spiller, who played for Buffalo, didn't have any room there anymore now that LeSean McCoy is there. I remember Spiller in Clemson. He was really spectacular there. I haven't followed him too close in Buffalo.
Just he's been injured the entire time. The one thing I don't like about Loomis and Peyton now, they're relying too much. They're putting all their money on ex-injured players. Max Unger was out last year with an injury. This linebacker they traded for out last year with an ACL. That kid from Florida they drafted last year, they're
Ronald Powell.
Yeah, he had two torn ACLs. They're just getting players who are been out with injuries for so long.
And you know what's funny about it is that Peyton is renowned for calling players porcelain dolls if they're injury prone. Because sometimes he won't play a player if he knows that he's injury prone. He'd rather play a guy that he knows will play week in and week out.
And they're all injury prone, and that's what I don't get. And it's just like they have, you know, you got to fill the defensive line. You need linebackers, another cornerback. It's going to be a long year.
It feels a lot like 2006. You know, it does, like where the team got blown up and Breeze came in, Peyton came in, they drafted Reggie Bush. No one really knew what to expect, but by the end of the year, you knew what you had after that. It was a pass-minded offense with a lot of screen action, a lot of multiple wideout sets, and Sean Payton was this offensive wizard. Now, we're not really sure anymore. It feels like they're trying to change the identity and no one really knows where it's going. They retained Rob Ryan, so maybe they're going to mix up the defense some more by giving him more better defensive personnel, because I feel like that's where they're headed with one of their draft picks. Well, I believe they have two now in the first round.
They kept Rob Ryan and they got Browner, who is just he's more of a safety than a cornerback.
Yes.
So, yes, they're going to go more smash mouth. Offense, the problem last year was Drew Brees was running for his life because
offensive
the line
was
so
garbage,
bad.
Offensive line was garbage, yeah.
So,
what's the word on Jahri Evans?
Their word is they're going to cut him.
Okay.
Or restructure.
It's a shame because he was a perennial Pro Bowl guy for about 3 or 4 years, but it's time. Ben Grubbs is gone, too.
Grubbs is gone for a fifth-round pick. And, you know, you have more of a running game now with Spiller, Ingram, and Kyrie Robinson. You have a short passing game they didn't have. But it's just you lost the excitement. Kenny Stills was your stretch. You know.
Jimmy Graham was a touchdown machine in the red zone.
Exactly. And, you know, Sean Hill gives nobody excitement. And, well, the only good thing I think everybody agrees on is nobody feels bad that Corey White got cut.
Okay, who really won the deal, the Seahawks or the Saints? I mean, really, just flat out, hands
Seahawks.
On the table, who won the deal?
Seahawks.
But by how much? Like, would you
by
like,
a
if
touchdown?
You had to grade it?
Oh, if you had to grade it, you got the Seahawks got their missing piece on offense.
Would you guarantee, like, would you almost bet money the Seahawks will be back in the Super Bowl?
No, because in NFL, anything could happen.
Yeah.
Never.
You know what the NFL stands for? Not for long.
I was going to say no fun league.
But... that one too. All right. So everybody in that block, I'm sorry for the NBAers that wanted to listen to that. Adam and I had to get that off of our chest because the Saints blowing up that team is it almost feels worse than watching the Philadelphia 76ers. It really does. I hope they're not that bad, but the potential is there, even though they have one of the 5 or 10 greatest quarterbacks in the history of the league. That's what's making the whole thing. It's almost like Dan Marino at the end in Miami. It's like he deserves better than this. You know, it's just it's painful.
You know, just to sum it up, we're a basketball podcast on a wrestling website. We can toss in some NFL. Why not? We're already so miscellaneous as is.
we have to throw it out. We have to be jacks of all trade, masters of none. I master some things, but nothing on this podcast that you'll ever listen to. But I'm glad everybody listened to this one. Catch all of our episodes. I think we got a special coming up that I think all y'all will enjoy. Do you have any party shots for us as we get into the tournament time and the NBA sort of takes a back seat?
Tournament time, look for some 12s to beat some 5s, look for some excitement, then it'll just be the same crappy teams we always knew would be there in the final 16. And
from a layman's perspective, give me your picks. Like, give me a Final Four and give me a winner.
Kentucky will win. Everyone else doesn't.
Have you watched close enough to give me a Final Four?
I would actually need to look at it a bit, so not on the spot.
I mean, the brackets, I haven't seen the brackets yet, but it would be so hard to pick against Kentucky, but I think Duke will get to the Final Four.
No, Duke is always a choker. I can't.
Okay, we'll bet money on that. I think Duke will make the Final Four.
Okay, that's... I have no arguments there.
But you just argued with me about it.
No, I will bet you I say they choke.
Okay, okay.
That's Kentucky, I don't see Virginia or Villanova doing anything. I'll say Arizona, Kansas, and...
Arizona is rolling in the Pac-12 right now. Rolling.
Arizona, Kansas, and...
And then you got Notre Dame, you got Iowa State, you got
we'll say Wisconsin.
Wisconsin with Frank Kaminsky.
I'd like to say Maryland, just because I'm a Maryland fan, but I'll go Wisconsin.
Let's just kind of talk about this before we get out of here. The competition in the Naismith Award has been between Kaminsky and Okafor. Okafor is a surefire NBA player. What do you think of Kaminsky?
He'll just be a fringe, you know, late round pick, and there'll be a home for him. It's just he's more of a college.
Yeah, but he's better than like a Michael Doliak or a like a Mason Plumlee. I think he's better than that.
Yeah, but what's his real? You know, what are you hoping him to be? A Robin Lopez?
Well, he's a polished big man who can shoot. And can face the basket.
That's the thing, but I don't see him being super dominant like, let's say, like Brook Lopez almost.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, he's not that big. Like, he's not that strong.
That's the thing, is he's not strong, so he's going to have to be a stretch. And
Like Ryan, I hate to do white to white, you know, I mean, because it's so typical. But imagine Ryan Kelly, only more skilled.
I'd say a little better than Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly's a role player at best. He was good at Duke, though. That's
so sort of like you're looking for a bigger Ryan Anderson, almost.
Yes, a taller Ryan Anderson. Slower, though. That's not a bad player. It isn't. It's not a bad player. I need to find like a different player that's not white, so that I can try to balance this shit out. Imagine Boris Diaw. You know, like the American Boris Diaw.
A taller, skinnier Boris Diaw.
So Kentucky goes chalk.
Yeah.
I'll say yes, but I'm still not sure. I mean, history beckons. History beckons the macho man. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you know, speaking of Kentucky, next week's our Kentucky special, so
yeah.
Tune into that.
But we're tuning out. Host. We're tuning out now. But take care, everybody. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back next week. Take care, guys.